Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, delivering an hour of mystery later on from the program The Lineup. But first, it's the new adventures of Michael Shane with the case of the mail order murders, a syndicated recording broadcast on May 21st, 1952.
I started reaching around for the light switch. Then I saw something glinting in the air. It was a knife blade. It was headed straight for my throat.
The New Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Jeff Chandler. Michael Shane, reckless, red-headed Irishman, is back again in his old haunts in New Orleans. This is your director, Bill Russo, inviting you to listen to another transcribed episode, which we call The Case of the Mail Order Murders.
Who is it?
Shane, Mike Shane.
Oh. Hello, Mr. Shane. Come in quickly, please.
Yeah. Hey, look, what's all this?
Did anyone follow you here to my apartment, Mr. Shane?
Follow me? Well, not that I know of. What's this all about and why the hocus-pocus routine?
I can't afford to take any chances.
Oh? Can you afford to tell me what it's all about?
My name is Kinsella, William Kinsella.
Yeah, I know. You told me that over the phone.
You're sure no one followed you here?
Sure enough. Now, you're going to let me in on
what's... I want to hire you, Mr. Shane.
Well, that's the first thing you've said that makes sense. What do you want me to do?
Protect me.
Well, from what?
I don't know.
You don't know? Now, let's not start the double talk again.
Oh, please, but... Mr. Shane. Well, to tell the truth, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I can see that, but what of?
I tell you, I don't know. Sure, it sounds insane, but here, Mr. Shane. Yeah. I received this through the mail this afternoon.
Yeah, four names at the top of the page.
Yes.
William Kinsella, Ellen Dant, Joshua Jaffet, and Tom Swigert.
Yes. Now, read what's written underneath the names, Mr. Shane.
Those who have sinned will be punished. It may come swiftly or slowly or by an unknown hand, but punishment is inevitable, and the punishment is death.
Yes. Yes, you see now why I'm terrified. It's a death note, Mr. Shane. A death note. And my name is at the top of the list.
In a moment, we'll return to the new adventures of Michael Shane and the case of the mail order murders.
Well, it had started out as a pretty routine day. I'd helped an elderly lady find a necklace which turned out to be mislaid instead of stolen, and I'd spent the afternoon at a pretty stuffy wedding reception guarding the gifts. But then in the evening, a jittery little guy named Kinsella called me over to his apartment and showed me a death note he'd just gotten, listing his name with three others. One look at Kinsella's face told me he thought the guy who'd sent the note meant business.
Mr. Shane, you've got to protect me. Money's no object. First,
Now, just a minute, Mr. Kinsella. Let's slow down a little, huh? Have you any idea who might have sent the note?
None. Not at all, Mr. Shane. It's a complete and horrible mystery to me.
Sounds like some kind of fanatic or crank. Those who have sinned will be punished.
Yes, it does sound like some sort of fanatic, but who?
This the first note you've gotten?
No, there have been others, but I never paid much attention before because the notes were vague. But this note mentions death, and it lists names.
Yeah. I wonder if the boy who wrote the note is after you himself or if he's thinking of sending someone.
What do you mean?
The note says death may come by an unknown hand.
But that's the terrible part of this whole thing. I don't know who sent the threat. I don't know who's after me, and I most certainly don't know why.
The note says something about those who have sinned.
That's ridiculous. There's nothing, absolutely nothing in my past that would possibly warrant such...
Yeah. Well, what do these friends of yours say about it?
Friends? What friends?
The other names on the list here. Let's see. Ellen Dant, Joshua Jaffet, Tom Swigert.
They're no friends of mine.
Well, acquaintances, then.
You don't understand, Mr. Shane. I don't even know these people.
Huh?
I've never heard of any of them. Their names mean nothing to me.
You sure about that, Mr. Kinsella?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it sort of complicates things. I thought maybe if I could find something to connect you with these other three, some link between you, we might have something to go on. But
Mr. Shane, please stay here with me and protect me, at least long enough for me to wind up my affairs so that I can leave New Orleans if necessary.
Well, I
don't know what your usual rate of pay is per day, but I'll double it.
You know, you're getting more convincing by the moment, Mr. Kinsella.
I have plenty of room for you here.
Okay. I'll go home and pick up a toothbrush and be back here in an hour. I went outside and down the street. I was thinking about how terrified Kinsella seemed to be about the whole thing. I was wondering if maybe he knew a little more about why someone wanted to kill him than he'd told me. Then about half a block away from Kinsella's apartment, I spotted what was undoubtedly one of the last of its kind in existence. An organ grinder man. He was a stocky, barrel-chested gent. The hand organ he was cranking sounded as if it was protesting against overwork. On his shoulder perched a little monkey dressed in a red corduroy suit and a green hat with a feather. The whole sight took me back about 20 years. So I fished around in my pocket for a coin and waited for him. Hello.
Sorry,
I didn't mean to scare you. I guess you didn't see me. Sort of a dark night.
Yes, a dark night.
Oh, yeah. You know, I haven't seen an organ grinder since I was a kid, practically.
So? There's not many of us left now.
No, I guess not. You're working kind of late tonight, huh?
Night to day makes no difference.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right. Hey, some monkey you got there.
It's a fine monkey. Pepe. You want to see Pepe do dance?
No, I'm afraid I haven't the time.
Name is Demetrius.
Demetrius. Some other time. Oh, here's a little something.
You talk to Pepe. He catch.
Okay. Hey, he could play shortstop on a few teams I know of. Where'd you get
him? Marco Gona. Thanks, mister. Good night.
Demetrius started cranking the hand organ again and moved on down the street. Pepe turned around, stared at me a moment, and then delicately stuck out his tongue. Such gratitude. I went to my room, picked up my things, and went back to Kinsella's apartment. He showed me to my new room. I suggested he lock his door and also his window because it was a ground floor apartment. Then we both turned in. I guess it was a little after midnight when something woke me up. I couldn't tell just what it was, but I remembered vaguely hearing some kind of sound. I got out of bed and went out in the living room. Turned on the lights. Nothing there. Then I went to Kinsella's bedroom door. Mr. Kinsella? Mr. Kinsella? Hey, Kinsella!
What is it?
Shane, open the door.
What's the matter, Shane?
You had me worried for a minute.
I guess I was sound asleep. What is it?
Something woke me up. A slight noise. I thought I'd better check to make sure you're okay.
Oh, yes, I'm all right. Matter of fact, I was having a very pleasant dream. I could hear some sort of strange music. It seemed like it was right under my window.
Music?
Yes, like a calliope. I could hear...
A calliope?
Sort of.
Hey, wait a minute. Could it have been a hand organ?
Why, yes. Yes, that's what it was. I dreamt.
Maybe the music wasn't a dream. Demetrius really does work late.
Huh? What are you talking about?
Skipper. Well, let's turn in again. Nothing happened the rest of the night except that I had a long dream about perching on a guy's shoulder dressed in a red corduroy suit while people tossed nickels at me. Might be an easier way to make a living at that. The next morning, bright and early, I told Kinsella to lock himself in for the day. Then I went down to police headquarters and in the door marked homicide.
Hello, Shane.
Good morning, Inspector. How's the mastermind of the Homicide Bureau these days?
Thanks. You looking for a job, Shane, or you want to borrow some dough?
No. As you sometimes say, La Viva, wrong twice. I already have a job. Matter of fact, that's what I came down to talk to you about.
I'm all...
Ears. I know.
Talk, funny man.
I've been hired by a guy named Kinsella who received what looks like a crank note. who's taking the whole thing very seriously.
So?
So the note has four names on it, Kinsella, Ellen Dant, Joshua Jaffet, and Tom Swaggart. May not be anything to it, but I just thought I'd drop in and let you know.
Let's have it again.
Have what again?
The list.
William Kinsella, Ellen Dant, Joshua Jaffet, and Tom Swaggart.
Yeah.
Why, do you know any of them? Or how about Ellen Dant? Kinsella said her name meant nothing to him.
Or me.
How about Joshua Jaffet?
Mm-mm. And I've never heard of your client, Kinsella. Only one we have a line on is this Tom Swaggart.
Swaggart's his last name on the list. What about him?
Shane, do you ever hear of the gouge killing a couple years back?
The gouge killing? No. What was that?
Well, there was a rich old gent named Daniel Gouge. He used to live on the island of Capri in the Mediterranean. One day he turned up dead with quite a few thousand of his dollars missing. This guy, Tom Swaggart, was on the island at the time. He was questioned about the killing, but was released later for lack of evidence.
Hmm. Do you think this note Kinsella got has anything to do with the gouge killing?
I don't know. Yet.
You suppose maybe there's some connection between Swaggart and the rest of the names on the list, then?
That'd be a guess, Shane, and right now I'm not in a guessing mood.
Of course, the whole thing could be some crackpot's idea of a joke.
It might.
You don't think so, huh?
No.
Hey, incidentally, how come this Tom Swaggart's the only guy on the list you know anything about? Do you... friend of yours or something?
Not exactly a friend right now. He's sort of a special project of mine.
What do you mean?
We found Swaggart down near the waterfront last night. Had a knife in his back. Very dead.
In a moment, we'll return to the new adventures of Michael Shane and the case of the mail order murders.
It all started when a guy named Kinsella hired me to protect him from an unknown killer who'd sent him a death threat. On the note were listed four names: Kinsella, Ellen Dant, Joshua Jaffet, and Tom Swaggart. Kinsella said he didn't know any of the other three. So the next morning, I wasn't sure just how seriously to take the note when I went down to police headquarters to tell Inspector Lefebvre about it. But Lefebvre took it very seriously. And with good reason. He told me that the last man on the list, Tom Swaggart, had been murdered the night before.
So, like I say, Shane, whoever wrote that note means business.
In all Lefebvre, it'd be interesting if it turned out that the reason Swaggart was killed had something to do with that gouge killing.
I don't feel like playing guessing games.
Well, maybe we'll find out before long, huh?
Shane, you're a real nice boy.
Lefebvre, there's only one reason you ever say those sweet things to me. That's when you want me to keep out or something.
Yeah.
Why?
Because whoever wrote that note wasn't kidding. He's vicious and deadly. He's already killed once, and there are three more names on his list.
So?
So if you get mixed up in it and get in his way, you could get burned bad.
Thanks for the advice, Lefebvre.
No charge.
Tell you what, I'll carry my little fire extinguisher with me full time.
You do that, Shane. Just one more thing.
Oh, no, Lefebvre. You're not going to give me that don't leave town routine again.
I was going to suggest that you do.
That evening, I decided to pay a call on Ellen Dant, whose name was right under Kinsella's on the death list. I looked up her address and went over. Ellen lived in an expensive-looking apartment, and she was a very smooth-looking creature. She wasn't very impressed when I told her about the note Kinsella had gotten.
Mr. Shane, I've never heard of this man Kinsella. Why should I be concerned about his getting threatening notes? I got one of them, too. But I think it's probably somebody's feeble idea of a joke.
Not much of a joke, Miss Dant. Kinsella says he doesn't know you.
That makes it mutual, then, as I've been trying to tell you.
How about a gent named Joshua Jaffet?
I'm afraid I don't know him, either.
Or Tom Swaggart?
Really, Mr. Shane?
That's just as well you didn't know Swaggart, I guess. He got himself killed last night.
Oh?
But that doesn't concern you.
No, it doesn't. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Sure, just one more thing, Miss Dant. Ever happen to hear of a rich old guy named Daniel Gouge?
Gouge? Really, Mr. Shane? Running around asking people about names they've never heard of before. Haven't you anything better to do?
Not right now, Ellen, but maybe I'll think of something. See you around. My next stop was at the home of Joshua Jaffet over on the other side of town. He was a tall, thin guy with thick glasses, a sharp nose, and a sharper tongue. And he kept the nose buried in an enormous stamp album.
Mr. Shane, must you stand in my light? I can't even see these stamps, let alone get them in the right places.
I'm sorry. Is that better?
A little.
Quite a collection you got there.
One of the best.
You seem to specialize in stamps in the Mediterranean.
Any law against that?
Not that I know of. Ever done much traveling around there?
None. Now, where did I put that Malta step? Now, look here, Shane.
I'm looking.
This is all foolishness. Complete, utter foolishness. Just because I got a crackpot note from some prank, there's no reason for you to come around and bother me with your silly patron. I told you I don't know any of the people on the list. Now, if you kindly...
Well, maybe I...
Mr. Shane, will you stop standing in my light?
I got out of Joshua's light and out of his house. But outside, it occurred to me friend Joshua had been just a little too quick to say no when I asked him if he'd ever been in the Mediterranean. So I went across the street and waited in the dark. I didn't know exactly what I was waiting for, but I waited anyway. And then about 10 minutes later, I heard someone coming down the street. Yeah, it was my old friend Demetrius, the organ grinder man. Hello, Demetrius.
Oh, it's you again.
Yeah. You really get around, don't you?
You maybe follow me, mister?
Me? No, matter of fact, I was beginning to wonder if it wasn't the other way around.
I don't know what you talk about.
Oh, no, no. Of course not. Where do you usually hang out around town?
The street called San Luis.
You, been in this country long, Demetrius?
No. Not so long, mister.
Where do you come from?
It's a long way from here. Sunny land, blue water.
It sounds like the Mediterranean.
Yes. It's a beautiful place.
That's what they tell me, Demetrius.
Good night, mister.
Demetrius disappeared around the corner. I stood there a while longer across the street and up a little way from Jaffet's house. It was about 10 minutes later that a dark-colored coupe turned the corner and eased to a stop in front of the house. Someone got out and headed for the door. I couldn't see very much, but it looked like a woman. Then as she opened the door, the light from the hall outlined her face. It was Ellen Grant. Yeah, the girl who said she'd never heard of Joshua Jaffet. She closed the door behind her, but not more than 2 minutes later, she came flying out again and jumped into her car. I started across the street toward her. Hey, wait a minute. Ellen! But I was too late. I crossed the street and walked in the open front door of Jaffet's house. There was no one in sight. I started down the hall, and when I got to the library, I stopped. Yeah, there was Jaffet, all right. Sitting at his desk, his nose still buried in the stamp album. And like Tom Swigert, he had a knife in his back. And also like Swigert, Jaffet was dead. I stood there a minute or two looking at the charming sight in front of me, and then I went over and picked up a telephone.
Calling me, Shane?
The fever.
Looks like the boy we're after is quite a knife artist, huh?
Yeah, but I'm not so sure he's a boy. You know, the more I think about it, the fever, the more it looks like these killings are tied up with the one over in Capri 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You found out any more about what really happened over there?
A little, not much. This rich old guy, Gouge, lived alone, except for one combination servant and secretary. Looks like now there were several in on the killing. Maybe it was a hired job, huh? Shane, I told you once to get out of this deal. Now I'm telling you twice. I think you're biting off a lot more than you can chew.
You forget, Inspector. I have a real strong jaw.
Just be sure you don't lead with it.
The fever's boys arrived about then and went to work. I left, and I went straight to Ellen Dance's apartment. Because it looked to me like this case was going to wind up real fast, and I couldn't think of a better place to wind it up than at her apartment. I didn't even bother to knock because the door was unlocked. I pushed it open with my foot and waited. Nothing happened. I went in. The room was dark except for a ray of moonlight coming through the window. I started reaching around for a light switch. Then I saw something glinting in the air. It was a knife blade that was coming down at me fast. I lunged to one side and the blade ripped down through my coat sleeve. I tried to grab it, but I was off balance. And then the knife came down through the air again. And this time it was headed straight for my throat. We'll be right back.
back in a moment with a thrilling climax to tonight's Michael Shane adventure.
Well, there I was in Ellen Dance's apartment, in the dark, with a knife coming down at my throat. I managed to get one hand up just in time to grab the knife blade. It cut into my palm, but I held on and grabbed the killer's wrist with my other hand. It was a small wrist, but strong. The knife started twisting up at me, so I put everything I had into one wrench and dove for the floor, twisting the killer's wrist as I fell. Suddenly, the knife went skittering across the floor. I jumped to my feet just as the door slammed. I went out in the hall, but whoever it was had been too fast for me. There was no one in sight out on the street when I got there. Oh, I gave up the chase and headed for Kinsella's apartment. And I wasn't in a very pleasant mood. Look, Kinsella, I'm getting awfully tired of this whole deal.
But, Mr. Shane, you...
You lied to me when you said you didn't know what this is all about.
Oh. All right, Mr. Shane. It's true. I have lied to you. But you apparently know a lot of the story already. I might as well tell you the rest of it.
Spill it.
I was Daniel Gouger's secretary in Capri. He was murdered for his money. I found out who the killer was. I've been running away ever since. The killer has been following me and has had someone else after me. Someone I don't know.
Yeah? Why didn't you tell the police who the killer was?
I know I should have done that long ago, but I... Oh, I don't expect anyone to understand, but... It was because of the way I felt about the killer. I couldn't help myself.
I see. Just one more question. Did Daniel Gouge have any particular girlfriend?
Yes, Mr. Shane.
Okay. We're going to set a little trap. Here's a pencil. I want you to write a note to Gouge's girlfriend, Ellen Dance.
Oh, Mr. Shane.
Tell her you'll turn her in unless she meets you on the corner in front of my office at midnight with some dough.
But I couldn't do that.
Look, I'll be there with you.
I wasn't thinking of myself. I just...
Look, you want to go on this way forever?
No, but...
Write it.
Very well. What are you going to do with it?
Gonna use it as bait. You're not exactly the world's best penman, are you?
I'm sorry. It's because I'm nervous and upset, I guess. I'm having a hard time forming the letters.
Yeah.
I'll write another note.
Ah, never mind. I think I won't be able to read this one all right. Okay, Kinsella, stay here in your apartment until 11:45. Then take a cab to my office and meet me on the corner in front. I think maybe we'll get this whole thing wound up. I put the note in my pocket and left. I went over to St. Louis Street and hung around until Demetrius, the monkey organ man, came along. I made a little conversation with him and invited him to the party in front of my office. Then I called the Fever's office and left an invitation for him, too. I was hoping it would be quite a gathering. Kinsella was the first to arrive, right on the dot at midnight.
Mr. Shane.
Yeah, you're right on time, Kinsella.
Yes, I've been riding around in the cab for a few minutes waiting until 12. Yes. She shown up?
Not yet. We'll just stand here in the shadows and wait.
Mr. Shane, would it be all right if I sort of kept out of sight when she comes? I just would rather not see her after all that's happened and, well, because of the way I feel about her.
Yeah, I think that'd be okay, Kinsella.
I'd appreciate it very much. It isn't easy for me to do this. Mr. Shane, someone's coming.
Relax, it isn't Ellen.
Shane?
Hello, LaFever.
I got your message. Now, what's this all about?
Just giving a little party, LaFever. I knew you'd never forgive yourself if you missed it.
Mr. Shane, who's this?
LaFever, a friend of mine. LaFever, this is Mr. Kinsella, my client.
Go on.
I'm afraid I don't understand this, Mr. Shane. I thought just you and I were to be...
Wait a minute. Yeah, here he comes.
Here who comes?
The guest of honor. A guy named Demetrius.
Why, it's an organ grinder.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Shane, do you think that he is working for Ellen?
Well, we'll soon find out. Hello, Demetrius.
Hello, mister.
This is supposed to be the floor show, Shane.
You never can tell, the fever.
Mr. Shane, will you kindly explain?
Mister.
What's the matter, Demetrius?
Who is this man with you?
He's my client, Mr. Kinsella. Why?
He's the one, mister. He's the one.
Huh?
Yes, he's the one I saw leave his apartment the night the first man was killed. Yes, this is Kinsella.
Let's have that again.
Why?
The man's insane.
Yes, I saw him. And then when the second man was killed, I was near his house. I looked through the window. I saw this Kinsella stab him to death.
I tell you, he's crazy.
And then tonight when you were at the woman's apartment, mister, this Kinsella was there too. He attacked you.
Why,
and...
you...
Kinsella's got a gun.
I see it, my favorite. I see it. Oh. Well, I think that'll keep our friend Kinsella on ice until your voice and cart him away, Lefebvre.
Yeah. So Kinsella was the knife artist, huh?
Sure looks that way. Now, if we only had the girl, we'd be...
She's been in jail for an hour, Shane. He picked her up.
Oh? Did she get a story out of her?
Yeah. From what she said, it looks like she, Japhet, and Swigert hired a guy to kill Gouge over on Capri. The three of them then decided to cross the killer. They took the dough and left in a hurry. So now it turns out that Kinsella here was the killer, and he's been looking for them ever since.
That sounds logical. He put his own name on top of the death list to take suspicion off of him.
Well, all I can say is you're longer on luck than you're on brain, Shane.
Oh?
Arranging this little trap to pick up the wrong girl. Bloody lucky for you, this guy Demetrius spilled what he'd seen and broke the case for you.
I guess you're right, Lefebvre.
Yeah, maybe next time you'll remember to keep out of these things.
I'll try to, sir.
Oh,
yeah, Demetrius. I'd almost forgotten you were here. Thanks. Thanks a lot for all your help.
That's all right, Demetrius.
Here's a little something for your trouble. No. Over here.
Thank you, mister. Thank you.
Demetrius didn't see that dough you held out to him.
No.
He's blind.
Mm-hmm. Demetrius is blind.
Shane...
Like you say, Lefebvre, it's lucky he broke the case for me, isn't it? Good night, genius.
This is your director, Bill Russo, again. Our story is based on characters created by Brett Halliday and written by Bob Wright. The music is composed and conducted by John Duffy, and Michael Shane is portrayed by Jeff Chen.
The New Adventures of Michael Shane, pontooned to Yesterday, from May 21st, 1952, a syndicated recording. Many people, including historians, say that radio died pretty much the day television arrived in 1948. But 4 years on, from the day of the broadcast we just heard in 1952, radio was alive and well. In terms of drama, on May 21st, 1952, listeners could have tuned in for westerns like Wild Bill Hickok or The Lone Ranger, a sitcom like Young Winter Brown, even movie actors Ronald and Benita Coleman on that day, starring in a sitcom broadcast of The Halls of Ivy. And of course, music was on the air on that day, May 21st, 1952. The Bing Crosby Show hosted guest Judy Garland, who had just returned from England. This is an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. By the way, you could have heard I Love a Mystery on that day as well, but now it's time for the lineup. A CBS episode from July 1st, 1952.
Where under the cold, glaring lights will pass before us the innocent, the vagrant, the thief, the murderer. This is the lineup.
This cold. I've had it a week now. Can't seem to shake it. Getting me down. Now, what's his name here?
Barksdale?
Yeah.
No, not yet.
Oh. Well, I'll be against the wall with Asher.
Well, when he comes in, I'll send him over.
Yeah.
See you later, Ben.
Right. What do you say, Ben?
Not much tonight.
How's the cold?
Oh, it's the same. Just trying to keep my head clear. Thing does pretty well.
May I have your attention, please? You people out there on the other side of the wire in the audience room, may I have your attention, please? Thank you. My name is Cogger, Sergeant Pete Cogger. I'll explain the lineup to you. Each of the suspects you'll see will be numbered. I'll call up a number, the name, and charge. If you have any questions or identifications, please remember the number assigned to the prisoner as I call his name. If you're sure or not too sure of the suspect, have him held. The questions I ask these suspects are merely to get a natural tone of voice, so do not pay too much attention to their answers, as they often lie. All right, bring on the line. All the way to the end of the stage, boys. That's it. Keep moving right across. Now turn and face the screen. Heads up, eyes straight ahead, hands out of your pockets. Step out to the circle when I call your name. Okay, number one, John Carlyle, armed robbery. Where do you live, John?
1145 Sherman Street.
What is that? Rooming house, apartment, motel, what?
An apartment.
Where are you from, John?
Here, I lived here all my life.
A little straighter, son. Keep your head up. That's right. What do you do?
I'm an electrician.
Where do you work?
No place right now.
Anyone arrested with you?
Yeah.
Well, who?
A couple of guys, Quinlivan and Steele.
Howard Quinlivan and Robert Steele?
Yeah.
17 and 18. They friends of yours, John?
No, not particularly.
They have the same address on Sherman Street as you gave.
We live in the same apartment, but we weren't very friendly.
You drive a car?
Yeah, 49 Merc.
Sedan, coupe, what?
Great sedan.
Okay, step back. Number two, Claire Burness, burglary. Over to the circle, Claire.
What was that?
Step over to the circle, Claire. You've done this before. Come on, come on. Where do you live?
Sure. Yeah.
Talk right out. Big room. Everybody wants to hear you. Oh. You live someplace, don't you?
Yes. I'm no vagrant. I live at the Seacoast Hotel. Oh, I got me a nice 75-cent room there. It's over on Arapahoe and 27. But, of course, the plumbing...
How long you live there, Claire?
Three. Oh, it's nice.
Where'd you live before that?
Well, across the street.
Well, what address?
It was 2214 North, 27. My wife still lives there. We're breaking up.
Sorry to hear that. What's your business, Claire? What do you do for a living?
Oh, nothing.
Stand up there. You own a car?
No. I don't own a car. I don't know how to drive.
Any weapons when you're arrested?
No, nothing like that.
What about the 22 automatic? That's a weapon, Claire.
No. They got it all. I just found that thing. 22's no weapon.
Since when?
Well, I found it in the garbage can when I was out walking. I was going to make a cigarette lighter out of it. Oh, such a little gun. It looked nice on my coffee table.
It was fully loaded when the officers took it from you.
Was that gun loaded? Honest.
That's what the officer's report says right here.
Well, are you sure about that?
Yeah.
I wonder if I could just see that thing with just a second.
Stay there.
Well, I just wanted to see it, that's all. The man has...
Get back there. Now, go on. Number
leaving.
Three,
I think I'll go
Richards,
home, doctor up, and hit
auto.
The sack.
Up to the circle, Alvin.
Night,
talk in a good, loud voice. Where do you live, Alvin? Ben, this is Pete. Sorry to wake you. Cold any better?
About the same. What time is it?
5:30. Ben, something's come up.
What?
You know Beth Leonard, the singer?
No. Nightclub singer?
Yeah. Somebody robbed and killed her husband.
Okay. Pick me up.
Beaten to death. Looks like somebody killed him in a car and dumped him off here. Officers Gerard and Junkston found the body.
Oh, complaint?
No, routine patrol.
Did they see anything?
No, they're covering the ground now.
Hi, Ben.
Hello, Doc. Somebody sure gave him a working over.
Yeah.
Hasn't been dead more than a half hour, Ben. Nothing more I can do until we get him downtown.
Okay, wrap it up.
Right, Ben. Okay, boys, take him away.
A weapon around?
Nothing.
Who identified him?
No one yet. Found this empty billfold in the alley. Had his name and driver's license. No money.
Now, let me see that. Ripped part way open.
Yeah. Watch and ring missing, too.
Henry Leonard, huh? 22161 Cherry Hills Drive. It's about six blocks away. Anybody talk to Mrs. Leonard yet?
Yeah, Asher went over and got it. She's over there in the car.
Okay.
Ever hear Beth Leonard sing?
No. Yeah, I think I have it then. She sure won't have anything to sing about tonight.
No, not much.
Hello, Ben.
Hi.
Mrs. Leonard.
Yes?
This is Lieutenant Guthrie.
How do you do?
Hello.
Did you see...
Yes, I saw him. That's Hank, all right. Or what's left of him. I don't think I'm going to be able to...
Yeah, sure.
I got it. Yeah, Ben.
See if Dr. Gerson's still here.
Right.
Hello,
at the Deauville now, and Hank came by tonight for the last show. We closed about 2, and then we had something to eat. Then we went out to the house.
Mm-hmm. And what time was that?
Oh, about 3:30, I guess. 4 o'clock.
Gone.
Well, that's all. Hank left about 4. We talked a while at the house, and then he left. Hank didn't live here. He's been in Florida the last 2 years. He just came in town Sunday night. We're separated.
I see. When he left you at the house this morning, where was he going?
Back to his hotel, the Delvey.
Was he driving?
No. I offered him the car, but he said he'd rather walk. Why would anybody kill Hank?
We're pretty sure the motive was robbery, Mrs. Lennon.
Robbery?
Yes. There was no watch or ring on the body, and his wallet had been emptied.
Oh, he had a beautiful watch. Just a beautiful watch that he loved very much.
Can you describe it?
It had Roman numerals and a white gold case. It was a Girard.
Any engraving on it?
His initials, H-A-L.
H-A-L. Don't happen to remember where he bought it, do you?
I bought it for him on his birthday 4 years ago. It was the Wentz Jewelry Company.
Any other valuables he might have had on him, Mrs. Lennon?
Just his ring. It was a plain gold wedding band. He still wore it.
Anything outstanding about the ring? Engraving?
No.
Okay. Anything else?
No. May I have a cigarette?
Oh, sure. Here.
Thank you.
We want to cover every possibility, Mrs. Leonard. Can you think of anyone who might have had reason to want to kill your husband?
No.
Did he have any enemies in town?
No. Why?
The way it looks now, somebody just waylaid him and robbed him and killed him. But it's pretty far from your house to his hotel, Mrs. Lennon. Almost 20 blocks.
Well, I can explain that. Hank said he felt like walking. He was in town to talk about our divorce. I've been thinking of marrying someone else.
I see. And that's why he met you at the Deauville?
Yes, to straighten out some things. It was beginning to drizzle when he left. I looked out the window and watched him go down the street. He looked kind of lonely.
What about the weapon, Doc?
Blunt instrument is about the best we can do for you, Ben.
Any way you can narrow it down?
I don't know. Maybe something to this. It just came from the crime lab. Probably a copy on your desk now. I found some flakes in the wound. The specimen I sent to the lab's been analyzed. On the spectrograph, they found out it was a substance called ANSYS, corrosive protective product made by Union Petroleum.
Well, what's it used for?
Well, to spray tools and metal that might be out in the weather a lot. Like in a filling station. A lot of tools in the new cars have it.
Well, that might help.
You pick up anything out there?
Oh, nothing. No tire marks, no footprints.
Mm-hmm. Tough of you.
Yeah, looks like it.
Well, somebody's car might have a little blood on it. Oh, excuse me. Mm-hmm.
Pawn shop detail has the watch and ring on the hot list.
Oh.
That's about all we have to work on now. Yeah.
For you, Ben.
Oh. Thanks. Guthrie?
Ben, I'm at 22178 Cherry Hills Place, across from Beth Leonard's house, about 6 houses down.
22178? Yeah. What's up?
Checking the story about Leonard walking home. Lady here, Mrs. Sheridan, saw somebody pick him up when he left the house.
Does she know who it is?
Well, she says it looked like Beth Leonard's boyfriend, James Brewer.
Okay, we'll check it out.
Backing up the great CBS radio news team on election night will be Univax, the electronic brain. It'll be operating for the first time to bring you faster, more accurate, more complete election night totals. On November 4th, make CBS Radio your election headquarters to hear the trends, the color, and the results. You'll hear Edward R. Murrow, Lowell Thomas, and the rest of the same great CBS radio team that made convention reporting history earlier this year.
That's crazy. I was right here in bed.
Any way you can prove that, Mr. Brewer?
Prove I was in bed? Lord, no, I was here, that's all. I was home and in bed by 11 last night. I don't quite understand why you're here.
Just checking. You drive a 51 Cadillac sedan?
That's right.
Black?
Mm-hmm.
This witness said it was your car.
Well, a lot of people have cars like that. It wasn't mine.
Well, now, understand, we have to look into all these things.
Sure, I understand. You want to come in here?
Yeah. Where were you last night before you came home?
Working. I own a club out on Lincoln Highway.
Anybody there see you leave?
Sure, Charlie Monroe, my manager.
And you came right home, went to bed?
Yeah.
You knew Henry Leonard?
Sure, I've known him 10 or 12 years. Knew him before he married Beth.
Were you on good terms with him?
What do you mean? Yeah, I think so. Good terms you can be with a husband of the woman you're going to marry. Look, Beth and Hank broke up 2 years ago. They never could work things out. Beth asked Hank to come back in town, talk about a divorce. That's why he was here. Beth and I wanted to get married.
Yeah. Did you see him while he was in town?
Yeah, Sunday night. We all had dinner here.
Did you talk about the divorce?
Yeah. Hank said it was all right with him if that's what Beth wanted.
Sunday the only time you saw him?
That's right. I know you have to look into all sorts of things, but I didn't kill him, if that's what you're driving at.
You own a raincoat, Mr. Brewer?
Sure.
I'd like to see it.
I sent it to the cleaners a couple days ago.
You remember what cleaners?
Windsor. Why?
Just want to look at it.
Now, listen, you two. I'm no criminal. I have no record. I've never been in trouble with the law. You have no reason to inquire into my personal life and the things I do. I've been pretty nice to you up to now, but I won't stand for this. I have a lawyer who might be able to make something out of your accusations.
We aren't making any accusations, Mr. Brewer. Just looking for the facts.
Well, look for them someplace else. This is my home, and until you have a warrant or something, you have no right to come
here.
Don't
ever tell a police officer working on a homicide that he has no right to make inquiries. We'll contact you later.
What do you think, Ben?
Pretty big guy.
Yeah. Aye, his car's in the garage, Ben.
You got a chance to look at it?
Yeah, the jack handle's missing.
Miss Leonard?
Yeah, that's right. Police.
Oh, please. Oh, certainly. Well, she's just finishing up now. Can you wait?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. How about the bar?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And now, because you've all asked for it, here it is again, your favorite and mine. This lovely day will lengthen in. Goodbye to all we've ever had. Alone, where we have walked together, I'll remember April and be glad. I'll be content. You loved me once in April. Your lips were warm, and love and spring were new. But I'm not afraid of autumn and her sorrow, for I'll remember April and you. The fire will dwindle to blowing ashes, for flames and love live such a little while. I won't forget, but I won't be lonely.
Sure can do it, can't you?
Sure can.
Well, my kid has her record on that one.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, did you see this?
Huh? What?
Cover $10 per person.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here she comes.
Yeah.
Hello, Lieutenant.
Hello. I hate to bother you again, Miss Leonard, but we have to talk to you.
Again?
I'm sorry, Miss Leonard, but it's necessary.
Well, not here. We can use Mr. Hanson's office. Home. I told you that before.
Well, we know.
Well,
was there any trouble about the divorce?
No. No trouble at all. Hank was very sweet about it.
Had he taken any legal action?
He was going to see a lawyer this morning.
Do you know if Mr. Brewer and your husband had any words about this divorce situation?
No. No. Hank and I've been separated for such a long time. No. Mr. Brewer told me not to answer any more questions.
Well, I wish he hadn't told you that, Mrs. Lennon.
He said you had no right to annoy me or him. I think he's right. You said you thought my husband had been robbed and killed. What are you trying to find out now? Mr. Brewer's no killer or thief. I'm certainly not.
Well, we have to check out everything. We want to find out who killed your husband, that's all, Mrs. Lennon. A witness claims she saw your husband get into a car like the one Mr. Brewer drives. She says Mr. Brewer was driving it. We're here to find out if you know anything about them.
I don't know anything about it, and I don't think I'll answer any more questions.
Are you sure we should look at it differently, Mrs. Lennon?
I told you, no more. Absolutely. Hello? Lieutenant.
Thanks. Guthrie?
It's me, Ben. Brewer hasn't been able to explain the jack handle missing from his car. We have him here still talking to him, but it may not be Brewer.
Huh?
Asher just called, and a big guy just pawned the watch that was taken from Leonard's body.
Where?
Bob Bomash's pawn shop, 18th and Curtis.
We'll meet him there. There's Asher.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Ben.
Hi.
Hi. He left the shop about 4 minutes ago. Bomash gave me a pretty good description. 6'2", brown suit, 190, no hat. He must be around here somewhere.
Yeah, what's the story?
Well, the pawn shop detail was in Bomash's place this morning. It was still fresh in Bomash's mind when the suspect came in. He signed the buy book, Harry Long. Here's the watch.
Movement and case numbers checkout?
Yeah.
Well, this puts Brewer in the clear, huh, Ben?
Yeah. Now we have to get this one.
How do you want to work it, Ben?
We'll lay it out every intersection for 6 blocks, every alley. Now, let's get some more cars down here. This sounds like our boy, and I want him.
Unit 33K, code 1.
Been an hour now, Ben.
I know. He's in the area somewhere. He could be in any one of those stores.
Might live around here, too.
66 at 205 at 617 Manning. See the woman?
I'll check in.
Yeah.
13K to unit 17K. Come in.
17K to 13K. Go ahead, Ben.
You do any good yet?
Nothing, Ben. I'll check it around.
Ben?
Hmm?
Going into Market Town with the packages, huh?
That's the description. Just spotted man answering description of suspect. Now entering southeast entrance of Market Town. Call it out. Cover every entrance, every street. Pete and I are going after him.
Market Town. Roger.
Let's go. Pardon me, please. Pardon me. Sorry.
Sorry.
Pardon me.
He's going for the parking lot.
Yeah, come on.
Ben, that 49 caddy's his.
Yeah. Mr. Long?
Huh?
Your name Harry Long?
No, you got the wrong fellow, mister.
Police officers.
Now, what is this?
This your car?
Well, yes. Hey, listen.
We better go where we can talk. Come on.
What about?
You pawned this watch a few minutes ago, Mr. Long. We'll talk about it for a starter.
No, we
won't. Watch it, Ben.
I got him.
All right.
Be smart. Be smart.
Easy now.
Okay.
Yeah. Attaboy. Okay, Ben.
I'll come with you, but I ain't done nothing.
For a man who hasn't done anything, you fight pretty hard.
Okay, Ben?
Yeah, he's yours.
All right, come on.
Now, wait a minute. You've got nothing on me.
Ben, huh? These look like bloodstains to you?
Yeah. Better phone in. Tell him to let Brewer go.
Lineup, starring Bill Johnstone as Lieutenant Ben Guthrie with Jack Moyles as Sergeant Pete Carger, was written by E. Jack Newman with music by Eddie Dunstetter. Martha Tilton was featured as Beth Leonard. Others in the cast were High Everback, Peter Leeds, Victor Perrin, Howard McNear, Sidney Miller, and Virginia Gregg. The Lineup is produced and directed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. The nation's Forestry Service reports critical forest fire conditions in the Midwest, the Far West, New England, and the South, with many other areas showing increasing danger, compounded by an unprecedented number of hunters in timber areas. To all of you in or near timberland areas, these critical weeks take every precaution to avoid setting fires. Dan Coverly speaking. And remember, you have a Thursday night date with Junior Miss on the CBS Radio Network.
The Lineup on Tuned to Yesterday from the 1st of July, 1952 from CBS. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. Thanks for listening.